You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news and technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. We all know how important it is to keep your eye on the money, and not just your own. Stay on top of the latest financial and market news with Yahoo Finance, a podcast that releases new episodes almost every day. You'll hear a brief overview of the biggest news in the financial world, all in 3 minutes or less, right after markets close. Check out Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts. That's Yahoo Finance wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Join Ann Johnson, Corporate Vice President for Cybersecurity Solutions at Microsoft, on Afternoon Cyber Tea and learn from cybersecurity experts about defending your organization and systems from attack. Listen in for insights on topics like election security and why information sharing is crucial for combating threats, and get ideas for strategies to head off intrusions. Afternoon Cyber Tea is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Podcast One. Subscribe now.
Oh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Move over, liquor license.
Hey, Mo. This license expired in 1973, and it's only good in Rhode Island. And it's signed by you.
Yeah. I've been meaning to get that updated for this state and real.
Well, show's over. Nothing to see here. Oh, my God! A horrible plane crash! Hey, everybody, get a load of this flaming wreckage! Come on, crowd around. Crowd around. Don't be shy. Crowd around.
Some might call that ball Istanbul, but I call it Constantinople. You can stick me in a long Italian boat because that ball is gondola. And somebody better inject me with penicillin because that ball is gonorrhea.
Those are just some of the inimitable characters created by Hank Azaria, including some of his iconic voices from The Simpsons, and finally, the voice of a struggling but well-meaning baseball announcer slowly trying to work his way back into the big leagues on the acclaimed IFC series Brockmire. Now the fourth and final season of Brockmire fast-forwards 10 years into the future to find the aging Jim Brockmire taking the thankless job of baseball commissioner just as America's attention spans are dwindling and our love of the game appears to be on the wane. Season 4 of Brockmire premieres March 18th at 10 p.m. Eastern on IFC, and today I'm delighted to welcome Hank Azaria to the show to talk about his 31 seasons on The Simpsons, a few of the 150 characters he's played on the show, and some of the classic movie stars who inspired some of his most popular voices for The Simpsons. Hank also reveals how he came up with his distinctive sports announcer voice for Brockmire. He does his best to sell me on the great American pastime, but admits that oftentimes Major League Baseball can't get out of its own way. We discuss Season 4's dystopian vision of the future 10 years down the line and why it might not be too far off from reality, plus the tortured genius of Peter Sellers, Hank's love for the original man of a thousand voices, Mel Blanc, and he reveals which of his many characters from The Simpsons is his favorite. Coming up with the delightful and hilarious Hank Azaria in just a moment. I'm sitting down today with multiple Emmy Award-winning actor Hank Azaria, who is coming back for his fourth and final season as Major League Baseball announcer Jim Brockmire in IFC's Brockmire out this March. Hank, thanks for sitting down with me.
Yes, my pleasure. As As you just found out, I thought it was only going to be 10 minutes, so now I have to vamp.
We can stretch it. We can stretch it. I am so sorry about that. I know it's the end of the day. You're probably dying to get the hell out of here.
I am a little tired, so I just hope your audience appreciates what I'm doing here. That's all I can say.
I know that they do, and I know that I do. Because
I know that most of your audience probably feels really sorry for most Hollywood actors and actually having to sit down and talk about themselves.
Hey, most of my audience, probably all of my audience, have never had to sit through a full press day like this, so, and be on for, what, 10 hours at a time?
It does get to be a long day. It really does. You get, because you've said like the same things a bunch of times. So sometimes you like have this panic moment of, did I just tell this guy this like 5 minutes ago?
Yeah.
It becomes like this surreal, like Groundhog Day.
You're probably, I'm trying, what are the usual questions that you get? You probably get a few Simpsons questions. What's your favorite character?
Yeah, I didn't get too many today, but, depending on the product, like for this one, it's the end of this show. So are you sentimental? Do you feel like sad?
Yeah.
Got that asked a bunch today. And the answer is no. I love this character, but I'll just ask myself questions.
I kind of like this. Yeah, let's just go through all the questions that other interviewers have asked you.
Check the box, yeah. I don't get sentimental about finishing jobs. I think because they're so stressful, I think, and I'm so relieved to be done, and I, want to go home and relax and have a 10-year-old son. But even before I had a 10-year-old son, I was always kind of happy finishing a project.
Yeah. You're not one of those guys who has to have something lined up right after he finishes
one thing? I used to be, but less... More like in theory than in practice. Like I used to be like all stressed out. Like I gotta have my next thing, and now in my old age, I'm kind of like, oh no, I don't. It's perfectly fine. Ned, go relax. And one of the advantages of being around a long time is you realize careers, probably any career in any profession, but definitely in this one, it's a marathon, not a sprint, and careers ebb and flow and.
Yeah,
that's fine. There's a rhythm to things. And,
yeah,
like when you watch biography, and even iconic actors that are just beyond Spencer Tracy, Katherine Hepburn, they all had Betty Davis. They all had tremendous ups and downs in their career.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true. And it's funny because we only think of the wins. Like if we're thinking of Bogart, we think of Sabrina and Casablanca. But this is a guy who in his lifetime probably made close to 100 movies because all of these guys were working in the studio system.
Yeah.
So they may have made 2 years worth of stinkers before they got to one that was a classic.
And even beyond that, not to mention like often their personal lives were put them through the mill.
Yeah.
And on top of that, what's true of all of them is the bulk of what they did just was forgettable, not very good.
Right.
Never saw the light of day. And I'm sure they had, even worse than that, had many moments. I know Betty Davis and Spencer Tracy for sure hit times when they were sure their careers were done. They were just like, ugh.
Yeah. And the funny thing is they couldn't do much about it because they were in the studio system.
Right.
It's not like today where you can actually pass on a script.
No, there's much more autonomy. Yeah. I mean, that happened like 50 years ago, but it's much more in. But still, it still isn't in actors' controls no matter who you are. I mean, who is the top right now? Who would you consider like the number
one? My references are so old and I'm so out of date on things. You have no idea. So if you asked me, I would probably say Tom Cruise or something.
Tom
Hanks. I don't know. But I'm sure that there is some young kid that I've never even heard of. I don't even think he's the thing now. I think they're onto something new. I don't know. Robert Pattinson maybe? No?
I don't know. Whoever. Anyway, okay, let's say the top 30, which is going to be pretty intense. Okay. Jennifer Lawrence. I don't know whatever.
Okay, that's a good one.
No one can control when a project goes.
Yeah.
Schedules are pretty much out of your control.
True.
So.
Well, there's so many pieces to it, too. It's like, when is this director available? Okay, your co-star is available in 3 years.
Right.
They have a window of 2 months or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you know, even in the movie you're excited to do, if you planned it so that you're off in the fall to be with the kids and the studio says, sorry, we got to move it up, or nope, we got to push it back. That's that.
What can you do?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's still not in anyone's control.
Yeah. I'm interested that you bring up so many of these old iconic actors. I know that, you know, a lot of the characters that you've created, particularly for The Simpsons, were inspired by old movie actors. Like I know Edward G. Robinson is Chief Wiggum, I've heard.
Yeah.
Peter Sellers is a Pooh and so forth. Al Pacino, Mo. Are you someone who grew up on a lot of old movies, and you still seem to draw from that, I guess, huh?
Yeah. I mean, those voices were created a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know, on the show 30 years ago, and in my head even longer than that. You know, but like Edward G. Robinson, it was more Bugs Bunny, Mel Blanc's impression of Edward G. Robinson that sort of got in my head as a kid.
Oh, that's funny, yeah.
And things like that. But yeah, you know, I was raised by the television.
Yeah.
And back in the 70s, you caught a lot of old movies.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of sports and, you know, a lot of everything, not to mention what was, you know, prime time back then.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes. But I was influenced by every voice I heard.
I think I mentioned that Peter Sellers was a Pooh. And I guess I read somewhere along the way that Peter Sellers was one of your icons, huh?
Absolutely.
He was one of your inspirations.
Oh, yeah. He was a big hero of mine.
Yeah.
You know, anyone who was that vocally gifted, that funny, but also could be that. He was an amazing actor and could bring such reality and specificity to his characters.
Yeah, I mean, he really disappeared into them.
Yes. You know, even Clouseau had like a real emotional truth, you know, not to mention, you know, being there, which I think you won an Oscar
for. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was that combination of realism and outrageousness.
Mm-hmm.
I found inspiring.
Yeah, I mean, what a genius, but a tortured genius. I've heard so many people say that with Peter Sellers, he was happiest when he was playing someone else. But if he had to be himself for an hour, he would be completely miserable and feel that he, you know, was just this boring, uninteresting guy who had absolutely no value to anyone. Now, you seem to be a lot more well-adjusted than that, but can you kind of understand that?
At least professionally.
Really?
I felt for a long time in my career, I had to figure out a funny voice or I wasn't, you know, doing anything funny or interesting. And I really only feel like it's in the last, even though I've gotten to play roles where I didn't do that, I only feel comfortable like really in the last 5 or 7 years where like,
really?
Yeah, I'm just as, you know, happy to sort of be myself and my own voice, and I can make that interesting or even just interesting for myself. So I relate to that.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's funny that you say that because, you know, of all the performances that you've given, probably my favorite was Tuesdays with Maury, in which you're basically kind of playing something similar to yourself. I mean, not particularly playing an over-the-top character, at least.
It's true, but, you know, I like, that's one of those that, and I was happy with that and won an Emmy for it and everything, but it's one I'd love to have back. Like, I'd love to approach that with, you know, the comfort I have of working like that now.
Really? Yeah, because that was what? 15, 20 years ago now?
It was about 20 years ago.
Golly.
It was a long time. And
yeah,
it might not have even been any better, the end result. I just would have enjoyed it more, you know, which I think does show up in your performance, if nothing else.
Yeah, definitely. I'm such a big fan of Brockmire, but also I've been a fan of yours since, probably without even realizing I was a Hank Azaria fan, since I was 13 or 14 when The Simpsons first came on the air.
Yeah.
I mean, is it weird to think that there are generations like myself who have grown up with the characters that you created and that a lot of these characters are now iconic parts of the culture?
It is kind of weird. I mean, I've gotten used to it. It's been on for 31 years. And I mean, even like 15 years ago, which is a long time ago, you know, when I went back to my college and realized, wow, all these kids grew up with these characters, which means a lot to me because, you know, I grew up really loving, especially those Warner Brothers cartoons. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bugs Bunny and Daffy Duck and Sylvester. That was like my childhood.
Yeah.
And then coming to realize, you know, as a teenager, that was Mel Blanc. It's not just me at The Simpsons. It's a bunch of other great voice actors. But
Yeah, I mean,
I'm glad to be part of that tradition.
Yeah, I mean, you have sort of been at least one of the people who's inherited the Mel Blanc mantle, I think.
I think, you know, I'm not just saying this. It's not false humility. Mm-hmm. Nobody could do that. Like, he's kind of alone.
Right.
There's like, in the same way that like Einstein, he was such a genius. Yeah. And I mean that really. It's like he was able to do things that no one else can do. Things like have one character of his imitate another character and make it different than the... There's an episode, one of my favorite episodes, Wabbit Season, you know, where Daffy and Bugs are arguing whether it's rabbit season or duck season.
Oh, yes.
And so there, you know, a lot of wackiness ensues. And at one point, yeah. Bugs Bunny comes out imitating Daffy Duck.
Yeah.
And then Daffy Duck comes out imitating Bugs Bunny, trying to fool Elmer. But here's the thing.
Yeah.
They sound different. Bugs imitating Daffy sounds different than Daffy imitating Bugs. And at The Simpsons one day, like 20 years ago, we had just seen that. And Dan Castellaneta and Harry Shearer and I were talking about how hard that is. And we said, try it. Like, tried it like I tried to do Mo imitating Chief Wiggum and then Chief Wiggum imitating Mo and make those sound different. And none of us could do it. Like Dan, like doing Homer imitating, you know, Barney, or Barney imitating Homer, or Harry doing Mr. Burns imitating Kent Brockman and then Kent Brockman imitating Mr. Burns.
Yeah.
It just sounds like some voice that's in the middle, no matter where you start. He was like a savant in that way.
Yeah.
Not to mention how ahead of his time he was.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with his comedy. Oh, yeah. And so, Mel Blanc is by himself.
Yeah, it's almost like you're adding layers of paint, hoping that they will combine into something else. And you just keep adding a layer of Chief Wiggum with a layer of, you know, Lou the cop or whatever.
Yeah, it just sounds like some hybrid voice.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine.
It doesn't sound like Lou imitating Wiggum or Wiggum imitating Lou. That's like impossible to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm a big fan of the show, as I've already said. And I've had Al Jean and Mike Reiss on the show before. And I think that you came on around the same time as them in that second season.
I was there in the first season.
Oh, you were in the first season?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. All I hear from people who've worked on The Simpsons is that at the time, nobody thought it would last more than a season, and Fox had no faith in the show, and the actors and writers were being told that, hey, it's just an animated show and no one's going to watch it, so it's just a paycheck, and when it tanks, it's not going to hurt your career. Did you ever imagine that it would have this impact on your life?
Well, if you recall, which you might even be able to, Fox Network itself was only a couple of years old.
Yeah.
And so the whole lot, you didn't even think the network was going to, because that was unheard of. I mean, there had only been three networks for, 50 years at that point? 60 years?
Right. It wasn't, I think they only had one show, like Married with Children at the time, pretty much.
I mean, there was Tracy Allman's show, which Simpsons spun off of.
Right.
I had a show called Herman's Head.
Oh, that's right. I loved Herman's Head.
And Married with Children was their big hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had shows like Cops and other things. And there were some shows that failed that I don't even recall. But really, nobody thought the network would necessarily survive, let alone an animated, primetime comedy. And then even if you think a show is going to be, even if you're some kind of crazy nut who thinks, I think it'll be a wildly successful show.
Right.
What, the next longest show is, 11 years?
Oh, yeah. It's not even
comedy anyway.
Close.
Yeah, I mean, it's like there's no such thing as a show that lasts 31 years. We're about to do season 32.
Yeah. I mean, it'll probably have that mantle for forever, for all we know, unless South Park catches up one day. Who knows?
It would probably have to be an animated show.
Yeah.
Because otherwise people are going to just age out of their roles.
Right, right. Well, Al says that he'll pretty much stay on until he dies. If he can, he'll keep making that show.
We all feel that way.
Really?
So we'll see, yeah. You know, it's going to be interesting.
Well, don't say that, because you'll probably have contract renegotiations
eventually. Well, I mean, we have one every 4 years, and we just keep renewing. But, you know, we're owned by Disney now.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see, you know, not just for The Simpsons, but all of television is sort of changing its way it's platformed.
Yeah.
So we'll see what ends up happening, whether it just turns into a streaming show.
Right. Yeah. It's a whole new era.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know the old episodes are worth billions probably now. So yeah, I mean, it's made for streaming. We're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back with more when we come back in just a minute. You know, as I mentioned, a lot of your characters are inspired by real actors. I'm curious, with this character of Jim Brockmeyer, where does that come from? What did you draw?
It's an imitation of what I refer to as the generic baseball announcer voice of especially the 1970s, but really any era.
Yeah.
That, you know, just kind of delivers it like this and can give you endless facts about the game, smoothly transition into a commercial read and tell you about what I had for dinner last night.
I love that. All at the same time.
And I was always fascinated with these guys and just started wondering, you know, comedic premises emerge. Like, do these guys sound this way all the time? Like, even when they're home with their wives?
Yeah, you do wonder that.
You know, if they're really wasted, do they, you know, if they act out the way that we've seen Jim Brockmeyer act out, do they still sound like they're announcing a ball game?
Yeah.
You know, do they dirty talk sex like that?
Right. Do they have the cadence?
We've explored all these things. The answer is yes, at least in Jim Brockmeyer's case.
Even when you're not saying an especially funny line, sometimes I just crack up hearing that voice.
Well, that's kind of my shtick, is finding vocal strangeness that's just kind of funny on its own.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I can't do it as well as Peter Sellers did, but that's the aspiration, is to try to, you know, color it in with as much emotional reality as possible and see if
you
can't make it believable at the same time.
Yeah, and you do a great job of that.
Well, thank you.
The voice is so iconic that apparently I read that you sued to protect the copyright of that voice. Is that right?
Well, there was some dispute over whether it was, you know, mine to do. And
Alton
was like, it's an imitation of a baseball announcer. Yeah. It would be like saying, you can't imitate Johnny Carson, I do it.
Right.
But it's like, well, no, many impressions are not vocal. Jokes can be protected as intellectual property, but not, you know, vocal impressions.
Yeah. Yeah. So can anyone do Brockmeyer then?
Well, yeah. I mean, sure.
Can I do Brockmeyer? I would do a terrible
job.
Go
ahead.
I can't. I can't even do it. We're in the third. Okay. I'm not an impressionist.
Top of the third.
I do an old Reagan from the 80s, and that's about it. That's the only thing in my vocal repertoire.
That's lovely.
And I've been doing that for 30 years since I was a kid.
Grace us with that? You're going to say, well.
Yeah. You have to begin with well. Yeah. What is it? Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall. I don't know what that was. That may be a combination of various things now.
I'm
a little rusty.
You got to put you on the spot. It's scary.
Well, you are the master, so I don't know. Yeah, and I also love the way that Jim Brockmeyer speaks. I kind of liken the dialogue to, I don't know, something between Damon Runyon and some old Kentucky colonel who has a lot of homespun aphorisms.
Yeah, it's like almost Shakespearean. It's like, it's sort of, you know, Al Swearengen.
Yeah.
From Deadwood.
Ian McShane, yeah.
Yeah, and
brilliant.
The way that...
What a character.
It was sort of, at the same time, really crude while being poetic.
Yeah.
I think Joel Church Cooper really kind of found a similar kind of...
Yeah.
Nearly, you know, like a sort of a guttural poetry with the whole thing. But that's a lot how these baseball announcers are. I mean, you know, Bob Costas, for example, who's a friend of the show and has done a couple episodes of Brockmeyer, he can really, you know, he can just pontificate like that, you know,
really?
Off the top of his head. Yeah.
He sounds like that.
You know, he's not as out there as Brockmeyer, but he can really spin it like that. And he's just conversing, you know?
Wow. For anyone who hasn't seen Brockmeyer, you do play this legendary baseball announcer with this deep, deep, deep love for the game. Are you a particularly big baseball fan
in
real life?
I love sports in general.
Oh, you do?
I probably love the Mets more than baseball itself, but yes, I'm a big baseball fan, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to admit it, Hank, but I still don't get baseball, and I've tried.
You're not alone.
I've tried.
And there's more and more of you people who don't. You know, I love baseball so much that, you know, in season one of Brockmeyer, we had this theme of how baseball's dying, nobody cares about it. And I'm like, what is all this? And, you know, our writer, Joel Church Cooper, was like, well, a lot of people don't love baseball. They find it boring and slow and disconnected. I'm like, really? Yeah. It's the national pastime. And I've since come to realize that that's very true. And it's a problem for baseball.
Yeah. And I mean, my problem is that no one has ever made in my whole life a convincing argument for baseball, because people always tell me it's all about the stories and it's about being out in the sun at the park, childhood memories, the smell of the grass, having a hot dog with your dad. It always seems like it's everything except the actual game.
Well, you know, look, all I can tell you is growing up, I mean, I loved all sports, so baseball was certainly no exception. Mm-hmm. And I just got really captivated by the excitement of the game. I mean, part of it for me, I think, is hero worship, you know, just these guys who are able to swing a bat like that and field the ball like that and throw the ball like that. As an adult, what I always heard and I found true was you really start to love baseball when you know it well enough to follow from pitch to pitch, really get into like what's the pitcher going to throw and why.
Huh.
Is he going to come inside? Really? Is he going to come outside? Is he going to throw a changeup? Is he going to throw a fastball? Is he going to, you know, set this batter up high and tight or low and away? When every at bat becomes a mini story that you're keeping up with, you know. But I admit that's a pretty deep level of interest in the game.
Well, yeah. I mean, the people who really love baseball, they have all the statistics in their head and they know the whole history of the game and every player. And that
kind of, well, that's not, I mean, I know a lot of that stuff.
It's kind of a collector of facts in some
way. Not a ton of it. Yeah. I know. But for me, it's more, you know, baseball's so situational.
Mm-hmm.
You know what it is? We can watch a football game and there's probably a lot more going on. I mean, there's 11 on 11 at all times in a football game and there's so many moving parts. And, you know, a guy who's a professional can watch it and understand this formation means that, and they're faking this play by doing that, and you and I wouldn't even notice it.
Yeah.
We just know he ran it or they passed it, and they either the pass was complete or it wasn't, or the guy ran far or he didn't. You know, in baseball, there's so much nuance to the strategy that it does take, you know, my son's 10. I didn't realize how complicated baseball was until I started trying to teach it to him. It's like, wow, there's a lot of rules. And not only rules, but then subtleties to the game. Like a runner at first taking a lead, deciding whether they're going to steal or not. Just that concept. I think he still doesn't totally grasp all the ins and outs of exactly what's going on there.
This generation probably thinks, you know, who's got time for all that?
Well, then there's that. There's there's the ADD of this generation.
Right. Who wants to invest that much in a sport?
Yeah, when we were kids.
To really appreciate
at least when I was a kid, I felt fortunate there was something to look at for 3 hours. I didn't have 18 options about 14 screens I could be playing with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is kind of sweet and sentimental because your character, it's almost like baseball is a metaphor for him for where the world is going and the loss of the values that he sees vanishing before him and that sort of thing.
Yes. Baseball equals America. And Joel always had that in mind. And it does in many ways without us pointing it out or not. But, you know, it's in fact Brockmire equals baseball equals America.
That's the equation.
Know? Well, he, you know, like most 55-year-old men, he's, you know, technology's confusing him. He prefers the old school of, no, you pay attention to a thing for 3 hours.
Right.
And if you can't do that, there's something wrong with you. Whereas the world would tell him the opposite. And, you know, what's, you know, corrupt about baseball is kind of corrupt about America. What's wonderful about baseball is kind of wonderful about America.
Yeah. Yeah. And in the third season, I feel like we sort of saw Jim kind of falling apart as he watched the deterioration of the world at an accelerated pace.
Yes.
And the rise of social media culture, the world kind of going to hell in a handbasket, the alt-right, increased intolerance. Now here we are in season four. We're a decade into the future. And we're pretty much there. The world has gone to hell in a handbasket at that point.
Yeah, and by 2030,
What was appealing to you about ending this show 10 years down the line?
I was a little nervous about it. That was the vision of Joel Church Cooper, who really, I questioned it a lot. I'm like, do we need to, you know, it was a few things for Joel. First of all, he's really adamant about not repeating himself in any year. He wants to try something new, which is really admirable. And for the first three seasons, it's worked really well. I think it worked well in season four as well. He loves comedy as social commentary in a pretty meta way. Very much the last episode of season three was kind of a preview of where he was headed this season of let's really take two steps back and talk about society in general through the lens of Brockmire and what's going on with him. And so season four is kind of all that. And, you know, he found a way to make all those statements, talk about where society was headed, talk about where baseball was headed, and wrap up a romance with Jules and Brockmire, and also tell the story of this guy's kind of final, his journey of sobriety as kind of coming back to wholeness, you know, not just dry, but how can he find meaning really? And happiness. With or without baseball.
I enjoyed what I've seen so far, but I have to say it's a pretty bleak dystopian future.
It is. It is. But that's very much, that's Brockmire in as well. It's very dark.
Yeah.
It's very much staring at like the worst parts of ourselves, either individually or as a society, and then finding what's funny in there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Arizona is a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
It's a disputed land.
You know, a content fatigue is a medically diagnosed condition.
Yes.
So far. Yeah. I got to give you guys credit. I think most of this doesn't sound very far off.
Oh, no, it's quite believable. In fact, by the end, it doesn't sound like you've gotten there yet, but by episode, by the end of it, it becomes almost an episode of Black Mirror, like a comedic where, you know, the operating system, Limon, kind of in a Skynet kind of way starts to take over and become sentient.
Right. It's like a digital assistant, right? But it starts reading your mind.
Exactly. And starts running the show.
Yeah.
And I think we handle that pretty realistically, and it's a pretty decent Twilight Zone episode is what it turns into.
Really. Yeah. And also, I mean, baseball games, I think, are now like 5 hours long in the future.
Yeah, I mean, that's a little bit, you know, heightened the way
Think baseball could get longer or could afford to get longer, could it?
That was sort of a comment on how, you know, baseball can't get out of its own way. And, and often it,
really?
It thinks is a fix somehow lengthens the game, you know.
Yeah.
That was.
Do you think that's true? About baseball?
Well, I mean, what's true is that the owners really aren't down for the kind of changes that would make the game quicker, would be more appealing to a younger audience. You know, even though football in many ways is incredibly old school, football really adapts. Like, it hears its audience and goes, okay, how about this? And it isn't always, it doesn't take itself so seriously. You know, baseball considers itself like this church that you mustn't desecrate.
That's a good point.
Yeah, whereas other sports are like, let's roll with, you know, come on, it's 2020.
Yeah.
So baseball takes longer to catch up.
Yeah. I can tell that you've given this a lot of thought.
Well, I love baseball and sports in general. Yeah. And we've certainly been given this a lot of thought in making Brockmire. Those things are all in there.
Yeah. I mean, not to give away anything or give away too much, but you become the commissioner of baseball 10 years down the line. So that's a lot of responsibility.
Yes. Which I thought was absurd. And it is absurd.
It is.
But I think we really find an organic, believable route in there.
Yeah. And hopefully Brockmire can save baseball. We'll see.
We shall see.
Well, before we go, I just have to ask, because you know I'm such a big Simpsons fan.
Yes.
Do you have a favorite line from the, 150 characters that you've played on that show?
Boy, I really like when Police Chief Wiggum sang Jammin' by Bob Marley for that long at the end of an episode. the random lines come to mind, like a Mo line way back ago when he's going to perform surgery on Homer when Homer's got a crayon rammed up his nose. And it turns out Mo's a surgeon and he hands Homer a card saying he's a surgeon. And the card just says, for some reason you hear Mo say it, that's right, I'm a surgeon. That line just stays with me for some reason. That's right. I'm a surgeon.
That's so great.
But those are very random, but I don't know. You know.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. It's always, for me, it's like that too with characters that I like. Oftentimes, it's not some brilliantly well thought out line, but just the most random line and the way it's delivered that stays with me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mo offering to buy a woman a steak the size of a toilet seat also stays with me.
I'm assuming Mo is your favorite character.
Mo is by far my favorite character.
Okay. Yeah. I think mine too. Well, I'm a big fan, and the fourth and final season of Brockmire premieres in March. Actually, I don't know the date. Have they announced
mid-March,
the date yet?
Mid-March. Maybe mid-March. Yeah.
Okay.
Binge it on seasons 1 through 3 on Hulu right now.
Okay.
And to catch up.
Catch up. You
and
got
then
a month here.
Season 4 will be on Hulu almost immediately, like by the end of April.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see it, okay, all on Hulu.
And before that, you can catch it on IFC sometime
on
mid-March.
Yes.
Well, Hank Azaria, thanks so much for taking time to talk with
me. Thank you.
Thanks again to Hank Azaria for coming on the podcast. The fourth and final season of Brockmire begins March 18th at 10 p.m. Eastern on IFC. And you can still catch him on The Simpsons every Sunday night on Fox. If you enjoyed today's podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts and rate and review us while you're there. 5-star ratings and detailed reviews are one of the best ways for new listeners to discover the show. You can also follow us on Facebook or on Twitter at @KickAssNewsPod and recommend us to your friends on your social media. For more fun stuff, visit kickassnews.com. And I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News.